Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art Beats and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Hi, I'm Johanna Ferreira, content director of Pop Sugar Juntos. Juntos is all about celebrating Latinx culture, pride, our many intersectional identities, and joy. Thanks to support from Prime, there's so much to get into over at Juntos this month. From conversations with the Latinx minds behind our favorite new movies and resurrected TV shows, to thoughtful celebrity commentary and exclusive interviews with some of the biggest Latin music artists today. And it doesn't stop there. Get more of the music, movies, and shopping you love on Prime. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more of whatever you're into from streaming to shopping. And get all of our latest coverage at popsugar.com/juntos. Con amor, Johanna.
Welcome to In Her Shoes. I'm Lindsay Peoples, and I'm editor-in-chief of The Cut. On this show, I get to talk to people that we love and admire, or some that we just find interesting. We'll explore how they found their path and what maybe have gotten in their way, and how they brought others along now that they've arrived. Bevy Smith knows how to command a room, and she's had our attention for over two decades. Her TED Talk was one of the most viewed of 2022, and her book, Bevelations, Lessons from a Mother, Auntie Bestie serves as the ultimate guide in reinventing yourself. I personally know Bevy because I was always a huge fan of her work at Vibe and Rolling Stone, and growing up, I just always admired her work and how fearless she was. So it was exciting to have her on the podcast today because she is someone who really always describes her life as someone who's taking ownership. And I think it's an amazing opportunity to be able to catch up with someone like her and chat about her career and, of course, why it gets greater later.
I'm excited about
talking to
you.
We've never done one of these.
We've never done one of these, and it's long overdue.
And I've watched you do these forever, so I feel very that I get to talk to you today.
I'm a chatty Cathy today. I just did Tamron today.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good.
So I start every show, because this show is called In Her Shoes, by asking what your favorite shoes are or what shoes you have on. But I know you always have some fabulous heels on, so I'm going to look down. I knew it. See? Snakeskin. Tell me about the shoes.
They're snakeskin. They're Louboutin.
Casual.
Right? Just a little cash.
A little red bottom. A Tuesday. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're iridescent, and so they're sparkly. And the reason why I wore them is because I woke up this morning and I felt the presence of the Yoruba priestess goddess Yemaya.
Okay.
She's one of the Orishas, and I felt her, and she is the mother. She rules the water.
Okay.
And so I put on cobalt blue. That's her color.
She has a very beautiful cobalt blue dress on, everyone.
Thank you. She is cobalt blue. Her colors are cobalt blue and white.
Okay.
And silver.
Wow.
So these shoes give you all of that.
Wow.
So that's how I selected the shoes.
Do you always select what you wear by things that you wake up and think about?
Yeah, a lot of times. It's a vibe. It's a feeling for sure. Like if
that's
I wanted,
so specific. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I woke up today and I was tired. So, you know, like it's very specific.
Yeah. It's something that I want to convey. So I'm very intentional about what I want to convey with my clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Because clothes are protection.
Mm-hmm.
They are expression. And clothes have always been something for me that kind of cement my identity.
So. I love that. Okay, so what would you say it's been like to walk in your shoes figuratively and literally in your life right now?
Well, I started wearing heels when I was 12 years old. So walking in my shoes in the streets of Harlem as a 12-year-old with like a little 3-inch heel or something, 13 years old, was definitely complicated. Because people automatically made assumptions that if you wore a little tiny heel and you were a little girl, that you were a strumpet.
A strumpet?
A strumpet, darling. They thought you were a tiny whore. And and I was not a tiny whore. Some of their daughters were tiny whores, but I was not a tiny whore. But so walking in my shoes, I've always loved high heels. I have a mom who is a high heel wearer. My mom just stopped wearing heels when she literally had a stroke. And being in my shoes in just kind of a figurative way, it's a really good walk right now. Mm. I'm in a really blissful space in my life.
I like that word, blissful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm all about trying to get people to connect with their blissful brand. Not enough of us understand what really sparks joy in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to get the bag. We know how to get the money. We know how to get accolades, access, and all of that. But we don't really know what's going to make us happy. So I actually, in my shoes right now, I have about 4 pairs of sneakers in rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wearing sneakers every day.
You do.
I'm wearing sneakers every single day.
Okay.
Because I have a real desire to frolic and to cavort and to skip, which is actually galloping on me, and to run around. And it's just bursting out of me, Lindsay. I cannot contain it.
I can't
do that in these old high ass heels.
No, so. I know, but I love that. So, I mean, you talk so much about prioritizing yourself, prioritizing joy. What does that look like? Because I do think, like, in theory, that sounds nice, right? But in practice, what does that look like day to day? Or what does that look like in you prioritizing yourself today, for example? What did you do?
Very busy day for me today, and I still found a way to prioritize myself. So I got up this morning, and I felt blissful. And the song that came to my head was Knocks Me Off My Feet by Stevie Wonder.
Mm, very good song.
Yeah, something about your love that makes me weak and knocks me off my feet.
Yeah, something about your love and makes me weak and knocks me off my feet.
So I put that on.
Uh-huh.
That set the tone. And then I began to write in not one but 2 journals. I have a journal that is purple.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, kind of like the third eye.
Okay.
And then I have an Oprah journal.
Mm.
And so I wrote in both of them. And what, you know, that was just so great because my day starts with my mom. She lives with me.
Okay.
And I have to make her smoothies and breakfast and all that kind of stuff. So before I did that, I took the time to journal.
Mm-hmm.
And then take a proper shower with a long one.
Mm-hmm.
With all the, like, nice scents going in the air.
Right, yeah.
Air dry, because that's a luxury.
That is a luxury. I can't believe you air dry. Wow.
I air dry.
Okay. Wow.
And then I put on a beautiful robe and started the morning with my mom. So that was self-care.
Yeah.
2 journals, a lovely shower, air drying, a beautiful robe.
Yeah.
And then started the day.
Do you feel like these are things that you've learned to do over time that you've been doing for a long time? Or do you feel like these are things that you came about in realizing that you had to do in order to, you know, sustain the life that you have and the busy schedule that you have?
So I haven't gone to work since I was like in my 20s. I'm not into working. Okay. Working is overrated. Get somebody else to do it.
That's going to be the headline. I'm not into working.
I'm not into working. Get somebody else to do it. Like, what's happening?
Soft life.
The softest, the plushest, the most luxurious. And luxury to me is free time and freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times people think luxury is the stuff. Nah. That's not real luxury. It's free time. And so what I've come to this life because I desperately needed to come to it. And it started when I quit my job at Rolling Stone magazine at the age of 38.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to realize what free time could be. Because before that, I had such a grueling schedule. You know, I would go, and you do it now. Like, you know, I was going to the shows 6 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was men's and women's. I would do sales calls overseas as well. And it sounds sexy and fabulous, but it's a burnout and it's a drain.
It's a lot of work, yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Sure. But can I butt in and actually ask you though, when you decided to quit your job at 38, what was it like to actually make that decision? Because I mean, now you've been away from it, so obviously you feel differently. But at that moment in time, were you scared to make such a big change?
I was not scared. Mm. I was foolhardy, I will tell you that. But I was not scared at all. I had already beaten the odds as being a black, dark-skinned girl, was curvy, who worked in high-end fashion. You know, I think that obviously things have changed drastically now. Mm-hmm. There's so many amazing brown girls in fashion. But there weren't that many. And if you were a brown girl in fashion, you had a certain look.
Mm-hmm.
And you presented a certain way. And I've always been me. I've always led with, I'm a Harlem girl first and foremost. And so that kind of thing was revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
I was wearing braids. Nobody was wearing braids overseas. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was
like,
what's going on? Can I touch your head? Like, it was just such a different time in the 90s to be in fashion as someone who looked like me and mm-hmm. presented like I did. And so I wasn't afraid because I succeeded in that tough space. I succeeded in all white rooms for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of gives you the courage to know that you can do all things. Because if you can do something like that, child, as Sheree says, who gonna check me, boo?
Love the meme. Yes.
You know what I mean? I literally was like, I can do this. Now, I didn't know it was gonna take me 7 years.
Yeah.
That was the...
So tell me about those 7 years and what that was like and what you were doing during that time.
The 7 years was what needed to be done. You know, the 7 years was, I did the first kind of like 6 months. I had to cleanse myself from my corporate self.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the sepia version of Eat, Pray, Love. I went to South Africa. I went to Zambia. I went to Brazil. I went to Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
So it was for the first time, Lindsay, that I understood what resort wear was really about. Because I was literally...
Yeah, it's for people who have yachts and actually vacation.
Right.
It's not... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's for people that actually... And it's for people who chase the summer.
Yeah.
So that... I quit in February and I immediately got on the road. And so I actually missed that entire winter. It's
okay.
The chicest thing ever.
Yeah. It sounds very chic.
Yeah. And so then I came back and enrolled in acting classes and writing classes and DJ classes and photography classes.
Mm, and you had hobbies.
Baby, I took myself on artist dates where I just went and watched the show or visited. I became a member of every single museum or museum mile.
Mm.
And I just was free. And I would like, I was one of those people that you see in the middle of the day and Starbucks that are like...
You're like, how old is this person sitting here?
Right.
So calmly.
Right. I was that person.
Yeah.
But I would do it at a Cooper Hewitt Museum, or Museum Mile. It's a great art and design museum.
Yeah.
And they have a backyard. And you can lay there and you can do your work. Because there's a Wi-Fi. So I would write whatever I wanted to.
Right.
You know, I would read. I would do all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so freeing and liberating. And it was the first time that I ever felt like a carefree black girl.
Mm. That's a big one.
Yeah.
How did you also manage, you know, transitioning from full-time job and the finances of that to then working for yourself and also just taking a break? Because I think that's also the big hurdle for so many people when they hear someone's story like yours mm-hmm. of saying, I also feel burnt out. I would like to do my own Eat, Pray, Love, or I'd like to go off and write for myself. Obviously, industry is changing so often. How did you manage that?
Well, I had money saved.
Mm-hmm.
I took the bonus that they gave me in January, and I applied that to my life. I burned through a lot of it with that Eat, Pray, Love trip. and I burned through a lot of it with all the classes, and I burned through a lot of it going to L.A. back and forth to try and, like, understand the business.
Right.
I spent a lot of money doing that. And in short term, a year and a half, I ran out of money. And then I was broke.
And then, you say it so calmly.
I mean, it really was. And you know, I got to tell you, Lindsay, I was really calm about it because I knew growing up in Harlem, I knew that there are a lot of people that are broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the end of the world. You see, we get into the status and these things that we have and the surroundings and the trappings and the things, and we start to really believe that we need that stuff to be happy.
Right.
And then you can see people, and especially when you travel the world, you know, when you go to Brazil and you see people living in abject poverty but having family and community,
mm-hmm.
it's a nice reminder. And I had family and community. Now I was broke. I had to go to housing court. I had to go from black cars to the bus. I had to go from, you know, 5-star restaurants to a can of salmon. But that was okay. Because I was doing everything I set out to do.
Yeah.
I was appearing on TV. I was writing for great magazines like Interview and Paper and Glamour and Essence. I was doing all these things. It was magical. I just ain't had no money.
Yeah, but you were doing things on your own terms, which I think is worth something.
I thought so too.
100%.
Yeah.
Did you feel like people judged you, or how did you actually feel like people around you took it in that you had made such a big life change?
I actually had to let go of some of my corporate friends because we were all very successful corporate ladies.
That's not a surprise. Yeah. Because
yeah.
I do think it can be like if you wanted to just hang out with a friend, they may be used to going to the hottest new restaurant, et cetera. And you're like, hey, just come over and I can cook and we can watch a movie. Yeah. And that may not be the thing that they want to do anymore.
Well, that's not the thing I want to do either. So, there's two of us. The great thing is I would tell people that. Like, people would invite me to galas and things, and I still had all the trappings, all the accoutrements, right? So I could go. I could look the part, but I ain't had no money to get the Tripiani's downtown from Harlem because that's a $50, $60 cab ride.
Right.
So I would tell them, I would love to come, but I'm not getting on the train in a gown and a high heel.
Yep.
And they would be like, we'll send the car for you. And I'd be like, well, I'll be there then.
Great, yeah.
You know what I mean? I wouldn't have not a dime in my pocket, but I would show up and have the best time. And that's actually how I created Dinner with Bevy. Mm. I was at a Hugo Boss Christmas dinner at Nobu 57. And I went, I looked the part, and I got there and I realized I was the only person in the room without a business card with a corporation, you know, a magazine, a fashion house, something on the card.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only black person in the room as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what that made me realize is that I had done such a great job at connecting with people and having real relationships that even though people knew I was no longer doing that work,
mm-hmm.
I was still invited.
Yeah.
So when I'm leaving and I'm tipsy and I see Omarion and he's like, Bev, I've been looking for you. Where you been? And I was like, you should have been at this dinner I was just at. And then I realized, how would Omarion get to a dinner party with Hugo Boss and with Esquire and at the time Details and GQ and all that? Because this is back when,
it was a different time.
It was a different time when they did not let us in. You had to be the biggest star, black star in the world to even get a feature in a magazine.
Totally.
And so that's how I created Dinner with Bevy. Because I was like, I have all the relationships on that side and I have a lot of music relationships.
Right.
And I put them both together.
Do you feel like Dinner with Bevy was the first thing that really solidified like the career pivot for you?
Yeah, it was. I was an accidental entrepreneur. And I never wanted to be an entrepreneur because I was really good at jobs. You know how some people are not good at having a job?
Yeah.
I was an excellent employee. Like I really slayed jobs.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that girl. So I didn't need to become an entrepreneur because it wasn't like the people rubbed me the wrong way. I always got what I wanted and pretty much what I needed from jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then all of a sudden I had to figure out a way to make some coins. So I became this accidental entrepreneur and I came up with that idea in December and I did my first dinner party in January and it was a rip-roaring success. And from there I did dinners for Kerry Washington, Idris Elba, Pharrell, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also, I feel like, have taken on so many different ventures, but also I wanted to talk about your, what you call Bitchy Bevy persona. How do you feel like you've been able to balance all of that, but also, you know, stay true to who you are and what you want to do, but also give people different sides of yourself without relinquishing the power that you have as, you know, your own person?
Well, I think once I stopped having the personas, it was very easy. Mm. It's not just show up as me. And you're going to get the same me everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, I know for certain, when I first started in fashion, I definitely felt I needed to become this thing. Because I was working in all white spaces. So
what did you feel like you had to become?
Well, I just had to be a little wittier, and sometimes the wit was a little biting.
Mm.
Because that's humor in our business a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's cutting. And, you know, I'm not a snap on people. You know, that's what we do in the hood, right? So in the rare air luxury space, this is a sharp wit.
Right.
And so I was able to do that, play the dozens in that regard. And I think for me, when I decided to put that life down and pick up this new life, I was able to show up and show out.
But what did it take? And what do you feel like it cost you personally to get to that point? Because I do think that, I mean, that's a beautiful thing, but that's a journey.
Yeah.
And that's also deliberate decisions that you're making to say, this is who I am and this is how I show up in the world. And that requires you to, you know, have a sense of self-awareness and understanding about yourself, but also leave a lot of things behind so that you can fully show up present.
That's right. I love you. You're so fucking smart. So that's how I really came up with, like, my Red Soul proposition, which is named after Louboutin. And it's really about defining who you are and so that you can be this fully formed personal brand. Because I understood before there were even personal brands that I was a personal brand.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I asked myself three questions. Who am I at my core? How am I being perceived? How would I like to be perceived?
Mm.
And those answers gave me the space to show up. And I don't believe that it cost me much of anything. But one of the things about me is that I'm an eternal optimist. So I really don't even retain the struggles. So, like, I was always easy about going to housing court.
This is extreme soft life behavior. I admire. No, I really do. I really do. Because I think, especially Black women, we hold so much, like, just so many burdens and traumas. And, yeah, and that stays in your body. So, I admire.
Thank you. But it has a lot to do with my mom. My mother came up to New York from Jim Crow South and was a single mother with my brother. And she was a woman who, you know, they called her the girl with the sparkly eyes. And she literally floated through life. And you would never know that she came from Jim Crow South because she didn't carry that with her, you know? And so when you are around someone who is sparkly and effervescent and light, my mother's very light. But yet has a lot of gravitas,
right?
Where it counts. It rubs off on you. She's an optimist, and I get it from her.
Hi, I'm Johanna Ferreira, content director of Pop Sugar Juntos. Juntos is all about celebrating Latinx culture, pride, our many intersectional identities, and joy. Thanks to support from Prime, there's so much to get into over at Juntos this month. From conversations with the Latinx minds behind our favorite new movies and resurrected TV shows, to thoughtful celebrity commentary and exclusive interviews with some of the biggest Latin music artists today. And it doesn't stop there. Get more of the music, movies, and shopping you love on Prime. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more of whatever you're into from streaming to shopping. And get all of our latest coverage at popsugar.com/juntos. Con amor, Johanna.
This week on The Gray Area, writer Derek Thompson makes his case that everything has become a cult. Well, almost everything.
Is Taylor Swift the closest thing we have to a mass cult today? No, I think she's the closest thing we have to Christianity. It's
me. Find out if you're in a cult this week on The Gray Area, wherever you get your podcasts.
I do feel like you also talk about, you know, just keeping your life very full and purposeful. And specifically, how do you, you know, teach people, or what have you learned over the years in finding fulfillment? Because I do think that's something that you touch on a lot. I remember one of the first talks that I saw of you, you were talking about this a very long time ago. And I remember because I was working at Teen Vogue as an assistant then. How do you view that now? Because I also think you have such perspective in coming from the fashion industry and working for yourself and not finding fulfillment in a job or a title or anything like mm-hmm. that and in yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think I, even working in the fashion business as a kid, I knew I was enough. So I think it comes from being in Harlem. You know,
yeah.
We have a lot of swagger. We go, you know, we walk through, and I think that that's the difference between us and Brooklyn people. Like, people always want to talk
not
about Brooklyn.
Not you starting
Brooklyn.
A war.
I'm not ever starting
podcast.
A war because, first of all, we're just the neighborhood. Brooklyn is an entire borough, so we cannot. There's no competition between Brooklyn and Harlem. Now, if we want to go Fort Greene in Harlem or Bed-Stuy in Harlem, we can do that conversation. And I think we know who win. Yeah. But we're not going to do that. There's no competition. But I will say there are real extreme differences. And I think it's because we are in Manhattan. So we don't have to cross a bridge or go through a tunnel. And we're literally two train stops away from everything mm-hmm. that happens. And
I
stuff,
hear that.
Right? So that kind of shapes you. And my fulfillment comes from my family and my community. And I'll never forget when I first started making, like when I first made like $100,000 when I was in my 20s, right? Mm-hmm. I'm from Harlem. We had median household income, like $35,000 for four people.
Right.
Right? So it's like, ooh, mama, I made it. Moving
big
on
money.
Up, right?
Yeah.
And my boss was like, you should move down here, the West Village. You know what I mean? Like, we can get you an apartment. We can, like, you know, I know people. And I was like, oh, why would I want to do that? I like working down here. I don't want to live down here with y'all.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that being grounded in my community and living literally never living more than 20 blocks from my parents, you know, it just gives you, it fulfilled me.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt like I was chasing them. Now, there were times when certainly I drank the Kool-Aid and I loved the sexiness and the access that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also was smart enough to realize that a lot of the things I was doing was very similar to a Saturday night in the hood. So even when I was like there and enamored by all of that, I was still very clear about who I was because I was always able to relate it back.
Right. One of your revelations is take a note, give a note. Tell me and the listeners what that means and when was the last time you had a take a note, give a note moment?
Oh, gosh. There's always those. I'll give you the perfect example. So take a note, give a note is something that, so to compare is to despair. Okay?
Okay.
But sometimes you can't fucking help it. Sometimes you will see somebody motherfucking winning so good. And, you know, just in some regard, and you'll be like, oh, but you will see that. And when that little, because I'm not a hater. So there are some people that are born to hate. And so this practice will not work for them.
Okay.
Okay. So if you're a born hater.
This isn't for you.
This is not for you, darling. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll see you when you're 90 and a miserable bitch. But if you're not a born hater. When you see someone doing something, having something, looking like something mm-hmm. that you wish, and you get that little, why they think they, why didn't I get it? When you get that,
yeah,
you take a note, you look at it, you look at them, you see and really look at the differences between you guys.
Mm-hmm.
The good and the bad. Once you've calmed your nerves, then you give a note. You leave a little heart on it. You leave a little message on the thing. Or if they're your friends, you pick up the phone and you call them. My friend Angelique Miles is a fitness enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
She's my age. She looks like a 32-year-old woman.
Okay.
Oddy. Down. Fit. She's all the things. And she recently just had on this dress. And I said, well, you know what? Well, look at that. And I literally like the way I look. But this time I looked at Angelique and I said, well, look at that. I took it in. And then I was like, that's Angelique's journey. I'm, for one, not doing 2 workouts a day. I'm not going to be, she lives a full life, but she also, you know, does
fitness
what she
is
needs
her
to,
thing.
That's her thing.
Yeah.
So she does things to, you know, she eats the way she needs to eat to get that way and stay that way.
Right.
I don't want to do it. So I called up Angelique and I said, baby. Well, first of all, I said, you're about to make men and women divorce their mates based on the way you look in that. That's why I said in public. And
okay.
Then I called my friend.
Okay. And what'd you say?
I said, baby, you are killing them. Keep your foot on their necks. I love it. And I love to see you shine.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's a hard concept for people to grasp because there's too rooted in pride and just not able to get past?
Yeah, I think also, too, people would rather try and pick it apart, right?
Mm.
They would rather try to figure out why it's not all that. Well, sweetie, it is all that. I don't know what to tell you. Like, she's literally all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And when people look at me and they feel, you know, things this like, and I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it because they're like, well, how and why? Because of the way I am, the way I look, the way I speak.
Mm-hmm.
It leaves a lot of people in a quandary. Like, what? You know what I mean? They be trying to figure it out.
The math's to me. But.
Thank you. But to many, it does not. And so those people should instead read my book. That's the take a note part. Read my book. Watch my TED Talk.
Yes.
And then leave a nice note. Yeah. And understand why I'm able to do the things that I'm able to do. Why my phone rings. Why I solicit nothing in life. Why everything comes to me.
Mm, I love this.
Because everything is as it should be. Because I'm living in my purpose.
It's powerful words. I love it. I want to also talk about other things that you're doing. I know you have a recurring role on Harlem.
Did you see me be a young actress?
Yeah. I mean, well, that wasn't acting. That was really profound.
Thank you.
But you're doing so many things. And so I want to also touch on that. You're doing Harlem. I know you always have a ton of things going on. How do you feel about the show? What were you excited about and just capturing the essence of your character, but also all the other things that you want to do? How are you handling and balancing that?
Harlem was amazing for me. I auditioned 2 days before the world shut down for the pandemic.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So I was in the process of also writing my book. So when the world shut down, I'm writing the book and I talk about it in the book. I said, I went on this audition and I was afraid to go. So I didn't know why I was afraid to go, but I went anyway. I say this in the book. I went anyway, and I'm glad I did. So in the book, I don't have the gig yet.
Yeah.
Ball comes, and they call me and say, we would like to offer you a role. And I get the script. It's 3 lines. And I call Tasha Smith, because she has an acting class. You know,
mm-hmm.
the actress,
yeah,
Tasha Smith, director. I said, Tasha, girl, I done got a role, girl. I need you, girl. And she says, all right, Bev, we going to work. Send over the script. I said, well, it's 3 lines. And she's like, well, okay, well, then we don't need to work. I'm like, no, Tasha, I need you, girl. I need to work. She's like, Bev, it's 3 lines. You got this. I said, Tasha, I don't got this. She's like, I'm going to give you to one of my coaches. And I go to this woman named Tiffany, who works at Tasha's workshop, school acting workshop.
Uh-huh.
And Tiffany and I spent 10 hours over three lines.
Dedicated to the craft.
Let me tell you what happens when I get on that set. Because I worked 10 hours on three lines. Baby, I'm so juicy. I'm so deep into my role as Aunt Tammy, even though she has three lines. I'm acting against Tyler Lepley and Megan Good.
Yeah.
Megan's been working since she was a child.
Yeah.
Tyler Lepley is fine. You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot going on. I get to that set and I deliver. I deliver so well, they give me more work to do.
Well, I was going to say, I know where this is going. Okay.
Yeah. I deliver so well, they give me three scenes. And then they ask me back for season two. And I have two amazing scenes, including the really pivotal one with my nephew, Ian, played by Tyler Lepley. And I'm so proud that I took it that seriously. I didn't go in there flippantly. Like, well, it's Aunt Tammy. She's close enough to me. I could just wing it. Mm-mm. When you get opportunities, you must take them seriously.
Yeah, I hear that.
And you can't work an ego. And now I'm in a new streaming series that's actually premiering at ABFF. It's called The Table. And I play a city worker named Doris.
Okay.
Who's a single mother who lives in Newark, New Jersey. And she's nothing like me. She's like got kids. She's always in her uniform. She's a hard worker. I ain't no hard worker. And you know what I mean? Like, it's nothing like me. And I'm excited about people seeing that part of me, too, to see how I'm really progressing in my acting.
I love that. I have to ask, since we're doing a ton of 50 years of hip-hop stuff at The Cut, obviously, you have been a big part of hip-hop being in culture the way that it is. We did Glorilla earlier this year. We did Ice Spice. We just did Carisha on a cover. Did you ever think hip hop was going to be as big as it is today?
Well, so I'm from Harlem. Hip hop starts in the Bronx. So, and that's like literally next door. So I'm there at the beginning. So hip hop is my music. But my niece is 28 and I'm 56.
Mm-hmm.
And we see each other musically. And it's hip hop that's the connective tissue. So when I was a kid, I knew how it made me feel. And then as an adult, like, you know, as a young adult, I was a hip hop hottie. Slaying the tunnel, slaying the rats, slaying all the things. And all the hottest rappers. Baby. I was that one. I was that girl. I was everywhere. I was an Instagram star before there was an Instagram.
I was going to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's that. But then I go into Vibe. And that's when my fashion world collides with my hip hop hottie world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. Because at Vibe, I then get to go with artists to Paris and introduce them to brands and people and all of that, right? And so I'll never forget when Emil did Lil' Kim for the cover.
Never forget.
And he had Donatella Versace make her custom thing, but he wanted her to wear Blahniks. And ironically enough, they just couldn't find any shoes in Manola Blahnik. And then Imam was the beauty editor at large at Vibe at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he lets Iman know this. Iman calls Mr. Blahnik himself. And Mr. Blahnik sends over. All of a sudden, there's a boatload of shoes from Blahnik. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I knew that I knew that hip hop was going to be huge because I saw from the beginning how it electrified people, how it inspired people.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw through all the different changes, the one thing that was the common thread was that it was an undeniable music of the people.
Mm.
And anything for the people is always going to resonate. I hate that we're going backwards on the money part of it, though.
In artists making less money?
Mm. I hate that we're going in the backwards on that. But I like that we are seeing more of the artists take control of their brands mm-hmm. and their branding. I'm very happy to see that because yeah. for many years we were just sitting around trying to get free sneakers from somebody and a jean suit. So, baby, where are they giving out jean suits and Levi's? Okay. It makes me so sad. I don't want you to go running around getting a jean suit
no,
from Levi's.
Please don't.
Yeah. I mean, no, shout out to Levi's, by the way. I had on the pier on Sunday. Go on.
Speaking of social media and how you were saying, I mean, you were obviously doing so many things with your career, but you didn't have the pressures of posting, doing all the things that I feel like we have to do yeah. now, when whether you work at a company or you have a brand or anything like that. You often say on social that it gets greater later mm-hmm. and give that advice to a lot of young people who I think, even myself, even though I'm not young.
You
I
are
think,
young.
No, no.
And you have the perfect brows. My Lord.
Thank you. it's like the one thing I have. I do think it's harder now. And I think people like you we look up to people like you because when you say it gets greater later, I think it's hard for people to see of like how does that actually happen when it feels like so much pressure these days to be all of the things.
Yeah.
What do you feel like you tell people that like good advice of just that pressure right now to be on and to have the persona on and all of that? And you realizing that things have gotten better for you later when you're doing things on your own terms.
Yeah. And I do think there's a lot more pressure because there's a lot more eyes. And like you said, you know, once upon a time, a woman in your incredibly amazing position would have just had to run the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to actually be the personality of the cut
yeah.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's double the duty. Sometimes yeah. double the fun, but always double the duty.
Yeah, it is.
And so that's different, right? And so the thing that I always try and remind all of you lovely young people is this. You're in these positions for a reason.
Mm.
It's not, they're not doing you no favors.
No,
you've
never that.
Earned
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
You have already shown up and shown out. There's certain things that they can't really take away from you. They'll never be able to take away this narrative, this story, these things that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw Glorilla, when I saw Carisha, when I saw Icebase, I was like, yes, ma'am. Come on, legacy. That's legacy work that you're doing.
Yeah.
So I hope that you can sit in that. And I know it's very hard to do so because you're just going to the next and to the next.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I really hated about being in fashion advertising sales is that you would have a really amazing banner, crazy month, and they would celebrate you. And literally, when the applause died down in that same meeting, they would say, and now what's next? What you got for this month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always,
like, bitch,
always
can
on
I rest?
To the next. Yeah.
Bitch, can I rest on my laurels? For just a, I mean, I don't want to lay there, but can I won't even take off my shoes, but can I just sit in the laurels for a moment?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would urge you to sit in your laurels for a moment. Don't allow them to make you stay on this hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Don't keep running. It's okay. You've done the work. You have you at your very young age already have a legacy. You do, little lady.
I'm building. I don't think I have, but
well,
I think I'm building.
Let me just tell you something. If for some reason you weren't here next month,
mm-hmm.
you've done enough here that the phone would be ringing off the hook with opportunities and options for you, which means that you do have a legacy because you have established yourself. You're not a up and coming ingenue. Yeah, of course, there's always things that you want to do. You want to keep going.
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
You've done it, lady. So you have actually earned the rest in the laurels because you've done it. You've got tangible proof.
She's holding up the magazine.
Yeah. You've got tangible proof. But you're not even seeing it because you think, well, I'm still trying to do this. I'm trying. Yeah, and you'll do all those things.
Mm-hmm.
You will. It's fine. Trust me, there's a myriad of things that I'm still yet to do. But I also respect what I have done.
Yeah.
And what I did in the 90s and what I did in the aughts and what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. But it's all this melange, it's this gumbo that makes me Bevy Smith. And that's why the phone rings. And when I left Rolling Stone, I was so wonderfully surprised at how many Black people knew who I was and saw me and wanted to work with me. I didn't know that. Because outside of Vibe, most people think I've had a whole career in that kind of space. I worked at Vibe for 5 years. The rest of my entire career, I've worked in spaces where I've been the only one.
No, I knew that, yeah.
So I didn't know that Black people were that aware of me. Mm. And so they'd be like, no, we know what. And this is before social media.
Yeah.
And I didn't have press because I was an advertising sales executive. So there was no press. But people knew what I was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they respected that. And my people did. Oh, my gosh, it was great.
Yeah.
So I will tell you guys that you guys are overachievers. And that's and that's the part that concerns me as the auntie. As the mother to my gay kids, that's the part that concerns me.
I can cop to that. I'm a classic overachiever.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. It's fine as long as it doesn't get overbearing.
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
Yeah. I just don't want it to get overbearing because there's always something to aim at. There's always someone else is doing something. Oh, gosh, it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
Yeah. So how do you balance that in, what things are you excited to do in the future, but also soft life?
Well, the soft life is going to lead me to all the good things, okay? That's what I'm leaning into.
Do you have stuff that you're like, I really want to do X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, I want to do the next TV show I do. I believe that, Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage.
Mm-hmm.
I believe all the world's a vision board.
Ooh.
Yeah. So this is a vision board right now.
I love.
Exclusive. Bah, 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 bah. I'm going to have a TV show.
Okay.
That's going to be like Shark Tank meets a softer version of Fix My Life. And I'm going to be a fairy godmother.
I love that.
And the other part of it is that I want to just spend, my mom's 95. So as much as I can get out of that little lady.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to spend as much time as I can making her smoothies and breakfast and lunch. We don't make dinner. It's too much.
Okay.
I'm not going. I can't slave away for her either.
Yeah.
But I want to spend as much time as I can just absorbing her.
Yeah.
And taking her in.
That's beautiful.
And making sure that she has a soft life in the last years of her life. And the other part that I'm really focused on is my love.
Mm.
I have a whole section in my book about Malibu Bevy. And a big part of Malibu Bevy is she doesn't work, avi, duh. But the other part of her is that she has a lover. And he washes my hair and greases my scalp on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cook dinner on our deck. And then when the sun is setting, we make the love.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's fish and grilled vegetables. So we're real, And we're in bed by 9. Yeah.
By 9?
Yeah, by 9, baby.
Wow.
Because I wake up so super early because the Pilates and the yoga person comes at 5, 6.
This is, I have so many other questions.
My lover is so amazing. He's divine in every way.
I love that you also call him your lover. It's very mysterious.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not for public consumption.
I'm here for it.
Right?
I'm here. I don't think everything has to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay.
Private, not a secret. I believe.
There we go.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh,
you're
my God.
So amazing and such a well of so many gems and wisdom. So I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate you. And I'm so very happy for you. And you make me so proud to see you shine in this way. I'm telling you.
I hope I do. In Her Shoes is hosted by me, Lindsay Peoples. Our lead producer is Taka Zen. Our engineer is Brandon McFarlane.
I'm Lindsay Peoples, and thank you so much for listening.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Hi, I'm Johanna Ferreira, content director of Pop Sugar Juntos. Juntos is all about celebrating Latinx culture, pride, our many intersectional identities, and joy. Thanks to support from Prime, there's so much to get into over at Juntos this month. From conversations with the Latinx minds behind our favorite new movies and resurrected TV shows, to thoughtful celebrity commentary and exclusive interviews with some of the biggest Latin music artists today. And it doesn't stop there. Get more of the music, movies, and shopping you love on Prime. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit amazon.com/prime to get more of whatever you're into from streaming to shopping. And get all of our latest coverage at popsugar.com/juntos. Con amor, Johanna.